Welcome back to the second official episode of Sunflower Signals. It's been a little over 9 months since the first full episode with Aaron the Angel. And now that my book, 1 Year with My Soulmate, is complete and published, it's time to get back to exploring deeper truths with like-minded energy workers so that we can try and piece together a better understanding of the human experience and what it is that our souls are doing here on Earth. For those of you who would like to read a free sample of 1 Year with My Soulmate, you can do so by clicking the Get a Copy link at the Sunflower Signals website on the ticker below. And with that, let's get into today's episode. I met Sage a couple of weeks ago at a psychic fair where she was doing tarot readings. Sage is the creator of The Rabbit Ear Mystic with a blog discussing folk magic based in Irish-American folk paganism and Hellenic polytheism. If you visit the Rabbit Ear Mystic website on the ticker below, you will find an array of tarot readings being offered, including personalized spell work. Thanks for joining me today, Sage. Can you tell us a little bit about Irish folk paganism and Hellenic polytheism?
Sure, absolutely. So thank you, by the way, for having me here. I'm very excited. So first and foremost, I need to start with a small disclaimer that not all folk magic is the same. It's not a monolith. It's not an overarching thing. Folk magic is magic of the folk, of the people. And it changes with the individual families to a degree, individual, like where your culture influences you. So that's why it's Irish American for me, because I grew up in California. But I do have, a lot of Irish practice passed down from my dad's side sort of thing. And even though he doesn't really acknowledge a lot of it because of his Christianity, I started working backwards on the decolonization process of that. So the Irish American folk practice is, it's going to change kind of based off of each person that you sort of encounter when it comes to folk practice. Not all magic looks the same. It's not dogmatic. But that's just the small disclaimer to start with. As far as the practice goes, I have a multi-foundational system. That's why it's Irish American, and then the Hellenic polytheism. I have a chosen practice, which is Hellenic polytheism, which is the Greek worship. I'm devoted to Hermes and Persephone, and I have many others in my pantheon, including Apollo and Achate and Artemis and Athena, as well as some of the naiads and the Maya. So that's very exciting. But the foundation, it's difficult to start with because it doesn't have an individual dogmatic must-have rule system. It's very much based on social etiquette and how you approach the community. So Hellenic polytheism has what are now called the pillars, but they weren't things that were, it's not like the commandments in the Bible where it's like structured and taught. They were social community expectations of hospitality and things like that. And that's where we get the term Xenia and things. Xenia is hospitality for the foreigner and for the stranger and for the person that we don't know. There's also charis, which is creating favor and relationship. In Hellenic polytheism, it's important to build a relationship of favor with the deities that you worship and honor and venerate. So it takes a while to start creating these relationships. It's not a full dive in. And so a lot of beginners sometimes will be like, am I doing this right? It takes time. It takes patience. Fast. Sorry, my cat's being scratching on things. I'm like, stop it. The Irish American paganism is something I sort of stumbled into. It doesn't have a hard structure. I grew up in the church. My dad raised me in the church. My dad met my stepmom in youth group, things like that. They were both youth pastors. And like many, it was a difficult structure that does not hold people accountable. And I did not wish to partake in that system anymore. I realized at a very young age that the holidays that I celebrate, you know, Christmas, Easter, these are the symbolisms in them have different pagan roots. They have different different roots and practices that aren't originally that. You don't find fir trees in the Middle East. You wouldn't find that in Jerusalem. So the Christmas tree is a very interesting, you know, you start to trace these celebrations and rituals and symbols back, and you start to recognize that they have different cultural significances that were bled into the practices, so that the survival of those ceremonies and honors of the, it was a timekeeping system celestially. So we have those integrated in many different cultures, and that's how we have this like amalgamation of the different holidays now with like Christmas and Easter and such. But I started looking at the original, I started looking at the history of it. And
you did this all on your own, or was there a guide or somebody?
I started doing this on, I just wanted to know. I started this at like 12 years old. My mom got me my first phone because my parents were divorced. So I got my phone a little early. I got it at 12 because we, you know, parents have to make sure that the kids can contact and all that. But that also included internet access. Dangerous. But I started immediately researching these things the moment that I got access to just human knowledge beyond the school library. And yeah, I just started researching these things. I wanted to know. I wanted to know what I'm celebrating, why we do what we do. There's a meaning and symbology in all of our actions when it comes to these kinds of things. And I've noticed that the holidays are that, because that's where it started. It started with holidays and it started with herbs.
Herbs.
That's how herbs. I started climbing the cabinets in my mom's kitchen and researching the spiritual significance of the herbs.
Wow.
Because, well, they have medical properties, so why wouldn't they have spiritual properties? And a lot of the time, you'll realize that those correlate.
And this was all coming to you at 12 years old, so you must have felt like you were being guided down this path by some kind of a higher spirit, or, I mean, that's pretty impressive that you would take this into your own mm-hmm. hands at 12 without being guided by anybody in the human form. Is that when you feel like your gifts really started to open up for the first time? I know you mentioned to me when we met that you felt like you had abilities when you were a very young kid.
Yeah, So I think to start the first answer, as far as what did I feel like I was being guided? To a degree, yes, but also I think every little girl believes in magic. And I was just extra determined to not stop believing. and that's what started. I was like, this had to come from somewhere. We didn't just, like, what is it? This has to be something. And so I was curious about that. And I grew up seeing spirits. My family, the women on my mother's side, all very much have the cunning, very much have dream divinations and intuitive feelings. And I've seen them speak something and then it come to fruition in strange ways. I've grown up in haunted homes. The home that I'm in now has spirits. And I've always felt them and interacted with them. And so I leaned into those abilities. And I've met other practitioners who've had similar things where they shut those out because of everything going on. They couldn't handle what was happening. I had the opposite effect. I couldn't close it out. I had to look at it, because if I didn't, I think it would have made me feel insane.
Yeah. I think that there's a lot of people that experience these gifts, and that's part of the reason why I wanted to hold space for people to share their stories, because what does traditional Western culture teach you about these kinds of gifts? You're nuts. You're loony. You should go on meds. You need to be committed, and that's where it creates it exasperates the mental health issue and the mental health crisis in this country when people go down that path. So I'm thankful for people mm-hmm. like you that are courageous enough to come on and share their story. Now, what is communicating with the other side look like for you? Is it strictly you're seeing spirit? Are you getting audible messages? How does it work? And how did you decide that tarot was going to be the main? And I know you said you do other readings as well, but Mm-hmm. How did you get into tarot, and what does the communication and receiving the messages look like for you?
Well, firstly, tarot is actually not my main way of communicating. I am my main way of communicating. Tarot is a narrative that I use to often give me better descriptions, because straight channeling can be exhausting, and it always helps to use tools. It's no different than you could build a shed from scratch, or you could use, you know, assisted tool work. This is assisted tool work. But ultimately, you're the one building it. I'm the one channeling. We're all connected. We are all interconnected. And I don't just mean people, I mean all life.
Yeah.
And so it's not as difficult, I guess, if we lean into that. For me personally, that's how I had to approach it. If I lean into the interconnection, it's okay. Let me try to explain it this way. Imagine that you're at a concert in a really busy, crowded, like, restaurant or bar or something, a room. And there's all sorts of things. There's music, there's conversations, you can hear people, you know, glass clinking, things like that. There's all of these different sounds there. You can even hear the cars outside. There's so much going on. That's kind of us in life all in general. Being able to channel, being able to hear or see or intuit, is merely about learning to focus and separate those experiences or see the different things that are connecting there. Through interpreted sensory, there is inner and outer ways of experiencing the senses and confirmations. And so it's kind of this combination, and it's not always a magic message. Sometimes a butterfly is just a butterfly. It's not always a symbol from beyond, but I can't deny when things line up and it's just a little too uncanny.
Yeah.
I can't deny the feeling that I get. It's similar to feeling someone stare at you at that party or at that concert or whatever from far away, but you can feel it. You just sometimes, yeah, you know, and then you can confirm it because you'll look and you'll see. And so it's more so about learning to center myself and connect with myself so that I can understand how I perceive.
And what does it take for you to center yourself and connect with yourself so that you can get those messages? How do you get into state?
There's breathing exercises, there's cleansing exercises that I can do. Ultimately, whatever method that I use doesn't matter. It can be through smoke, it could be through sound, it could be through like water cleansing, whatever it is, grounding, doesn't matter. Whatever method, those are just different forms of transportation. The important thing is that I am learning to, it's a form of meditation. Learning to, and meditation isn't clearing the mind, that's not what I'm doing. I am finding a focus and leaning into that focus. And when other things come forward, I can go, okay, thank you for that, but I'm not prepared. Either I'm not prepared to handle that at this moment, or I'll take care of that later, or thank you for coming forward. And then as that happens, you slowly start kind of clearing off the desk, so to speak, and most people have done this without realizing it, because it's just when you're flustered, it's taking that moment to find that quiet, to find that center, to reconnect with your body and yourself and your breath and your mind, and just find a moment of unity with yourself. That helps me open up and listen, because now I'm not dealing with all of my subconscious clutter. Now I've taken care of a lot of that, and I'm listening for what needs to come forward. I'm making room for it.
I love that. What of your experience in, and how long have you been doing readings now?
I've been reading tarot for 8 years, oracle for about 4 or 5. I'm in the middle of designing an oracle deck right now that will probably go up next year on my shop. And I just started learning. I just got my first deck of Lenormand, but I've been studying it through. What's really nice is there's like the Labyrinthos app, which is a divination card app that I really enjoy that seems to work really well because it doesn't just auto-generate. You can slide through and choose your cards in XYZ. But they have different card structures that you can learn. So I've been studying Lenormand for a while through that as well before getting my own. But at the fair that I met you at, actually, I got my first Lenormand deck. So now I'm learning another kind of cards. There's also Cardomancy, which is using a regular deck of playing cards. They don't have the special imagery or anything like that on them. It's very, what I like about that is that closeted practitioners who don't live somewhere where they can get them, or it's easy access. You can get a deck of playing cards at the like dollar store, gas station. So it's easy access. I've been doing all of that for, depending on the card type, anywhere from 2 years to 8 years now.
And when we met, you pulled the, or I pulled the Ace of Cups on the deck yeah. that you had designed. Would you be willing to do a little demonstration for the viewers and maybe expand on the Ace of Cups, let them know kind of what that means for me, and then see if we can pull a couple more cards and see if there's any messages that might be there for me.
Sure, absolutely. So first I'll explain what the Ace of Cups was symbolizing and how I designed it. And then I have two decks here that I want that you'll choose a color, and then I'll choose those because I want you to pick how it's conveyed for you. And so the Ace of Cups, aces are inspirations, beginnings. They're number one. You go from potential to a spark of initiation and inspiration and beginning. It's passionate. It's full potential. And so the cups is our emotions, our connections, the way that we leave that alone, Shmoo. The way that we, sorry, my cat, nurture ourselves, nurture others, the relationships and connections that we make. And so on the Ace of Cups that I designed, it's a tea set because that's what tea is for. It's for nurturing ourselves, nurturing others, creating companionships. So the Ace of Cups is a beginning of exploration on your companionships, your compassions, how you nurture yourself and others. It is the overflowing heart. And so when you were speaking to me about how you started your stream and what the purpose of that was, I think it really made sense because the whole intention of that was for you to find healing and connection to yourself and to the greater. And that's very Ace of Cups.
That's pretty cool that you would be the first guest that I've had since my first episode that I shot, you know, 9 months ago, that I would draw the Ace of Cups with you and then you'd be the first guest that would come on since then. So
that's I'm so honored. Thank you.
Very telling. Yeah. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Okay. Blue or purple?
Blue.
Okay. We're going to do our Crow Tarot.
Okay.
So I have like 20 to 22 decks of cards. So I chose two intuitively and then wanted to give you the choice.
I picked blue because I've been told by multiple mediums that blue is a big color for me. So
interesting. Okay. Yeah. Blue would be of the voice. So blue, as far as like the color alignment goes, is usually of the voice. And then of the third eye, would be indigo and then violet. And so I think it's interesting because you're working on healing up through the heart, and it's also the color of water in the sky. And so it's this healing of the heart through the way that you speak, as far as color divination goes.
That makes sense.
I find that interesting. Okay. So we're looking to expand on the significance and symbolism of the Ace of Cups from before, correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Okay. We have a few cards that came out. Nice. We have the Queen of Cups and Knight of Cups. How interesting. And then in the deck, we have a card that flipped, which is the Nine of Wands reversed, facing a different card. So one second. We have the Lovers reversed and the Page of Wands. Oh, okay. I know how this works out. Okay. So to expand on that Ace of Cups, this has to do with the Lovers reversed, right? And the Page of Wands. Now, the Lovers isn't always inherently romantic in my readings. It does signify other companionships. In my Alice in Wonderland deck, my Lovers are Tweedledee and Tweedledum, who are brothers. It's extremely close companionship. In this case, though, this is romantic. This is about the loss of your partner and how to move forward from that so that you're not stuck within this. You embodied and took place within the Page of Wands, learning to study those passions and connections. And what's interesting is that in our wands are our inspirations, our passions, the things that drive us, how we go to create. But in magic, when you use it in ritual form, our wand or our staff is used for concentrating, focusing, intensifying, and directing our intentions and what we are casting in our magic. That's why it goes from heart to mouth to shoulder to arm and out the hand. It first starts actually down in the belly, because that is where our willpower or fire comes from. That's why. So the page is a student of that. They are learning how, after completing 1 through 10, right, going on the numerological journey and coming back home through 10, they learn to kind of become like the college student. They're trying to elevate their understanding of it now that they've learned those lessons by having to experience them. And that's the page. It's that mental reevaluation before you become the wand. So the Page of Wands, I'm sorry, before you become the knight. So the Page of Wands studies what drives us, inspires us, and what is our desire of form of creation in the world to move forward from this lost lover, which is exactly the point of your podcast and your show and what you do.
Wow, that's pretty powerful.
That's just part one.
Okay.
Oh, I see. I read part two before part one on accident. So this actually started with the Nine of Wands reversed, which is talking about the feeling of loss and disempowerment, of feeling backed into, at the time, feeling backed into a corner, the rug pulled out from under your feet. With the Star reversed, talks about the loss of our dreams, goals, aspirations, not knowing what drives us, not knowing what's, no longer having something to reach for the stars. It's giving the eternal new moon. I get the vision of all the stars wiped from the sky kind of feeling. But they're not actually. It's just clouded or our eyes are closed. We're not seeing it. That's when it came to the Lovers reversed and the Page of Wands, learning what it was that we needed to move forward. What would be our guiding, because the wands are fire, what would be our guiding candlelight in this darkness, that Page of Wands? The outcome of that led to you wanting to embody the Queen and the Knight of Cups, both of them. And I think that that's very much you trying to connect with the compassionate, the soft, the romantic, the partner lost through this Cups Knight's journey, which is focused on making an understanding and a not being afraid of looking to the depths of the self and having the patience to move forward with it. Because the knight takes action. See how he's riding upon the horse, but he's willing to look within his own heart. And that's what the cups is, looking within his own heart for compassion and connection instead of being afraid of it, rejecting it, and hiding from it. So the outcome of you being willing to do the work is not only embodying the Knight of Cups, but also inviting and becoming the Queen of Cups, which leads you to a higher sensation of compassion. It's a patient and long journey, but it's very emotionally fulfilling, and it enriches everything that you come across and who you come across when it's leaned into authentically.
It's interesting because Melanie, through multiple mediums, referred to me as her knight in shining armor.
Yeah, she's the Queen of Cups that you're inviting in, and you are that knight of hers. Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. knight in shining armor. And in our past life, I was actually a Marine. And so it's interesting to see how this all connects. And in addition to you talking about the wands and kind of losing sight of the dream, all of these tools that I developed in a low vibrational space, whether it was as a promoter in nightlife to where it's now, I feel like I'm being called upon as a way shower for the mystical space. Same skill set, a little bit different. I had a sports gambling podcast. Now I'm giving place, holding space for energy workers and giving them a chance to share their stories. So it's interesting how everything kind of ties together. And now I've got this new dream that is being activated almost by Melanie and as she's guiding me. So very.
I don't think I would say almost. I think this is something that she very much invited you to do as a spirit. The almost doesn't set right. It's almost like, credit where credit is due. She said, excuse me.
Yeah, wrong choice of words.
It's okay. Yeah. I just meant, I very much can see her hand in this for sure. And how your love for her guides you through it for sure. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Very much so. Thank you. So what is the most profound reading that you've ever done without kind of breaching any client confidentiality? Have you felt like there's been moments with people where they've reached back out to you and they've said, you nailed that when essentially you predict the future? And then adding on to that, what do you think the balance between fate and free will looks like?
Sure. So I definitely have had clients come back to me, many clients come back to me and tell me, your reading was so accurate and you told me that this was going to happen in like 3 months, that this person was going to, say this or that this would happen, that this is how the dominoes would fall. And everything came out kind of how you said, and I wanted to touch base. I always invite my clients after every reading, if you need to, you can reach back out to me and let me know how that's going. I really care about what's happening. I can't be too involved because that creates parasocial relationships to a degree and can be a lot, but I do really care about what's happening with my clients. I do have clients who have come back to me for years. And I care. Some of them have become like companionships where, I very much care about what's happening. Community is extremely important to me. And it is a factor of everything I do. I am a reader. It isn't the only thing I do. I do ritual work as well and like community building. And I teach magic to certain people. I do have students that consistently come back monthly and stuff and talk to me about things. And so building community is so significant to what I do. So I do like hearing back. Some of the more profound ones that I've experienced would be usually I've had people have messages from mothers who have passed, children who have passed, lost loved ones, husbands. Some of the gods I work with and worship and some of the gods I'm devoted to, the reason I say those three categories is they are separate experiences, by the way. They're not interchangeable, so I do use them specifically. Is that they are spiritfarers, psychopomps, underworld guides, or guardians of the dead. I do very much find that to be sacred work. So worshiping messengers and spiritfarers is very sacred to me. I think that is such an honor when I have a spirit or a person choose me and trust me to be the carrier of that. Those are usually the ones that resonate the most deeply with me. I cry with my clients. I do. I cry with them. I mourn with them during this, when it happens, and feel their grief very deeply. I'm very emotionally attached to what happens in these conversations, I very much feel with them. And so those are usually the most impactful to me, I think. But I've also had silly, goofy ones. I've helped people find their guides and stuff like that, and better identify them and things. And those are also, I feel like, very profound as far as my practice goes. As far as if fate and choice, I think, are two sides of a coin. Maybe not even. I think they're two hands of the same body. Our choices are ours to make, but there are things that will just lead to each other if they aren't disrupted. There are things that we contract into that, as an astrologer and as a channeler, I have seen that there are things that we are contracted to, but it doesn't mean that everything is absolutely fated in the way that it happens. There will be points of experience that are unavoidable, and that's why when we come to trying to dodge our fate, that's why our stories and myths exist of those, we make them happen. I have to call it submitting to the river. There are points in life when you are in a current and we are not strong enough to swim past the current. You can flail, you can fight it. Eventually the water's going to do what it does. To fight that current in an undertow, in real life, you are more likely to drown. And symbolically, how that translates for me is I have to submit to the river. I have to submit to the current. It is the quickest way that I am more likely to make it back to surface and be able to get out, or have autonomy again. Divination, as far as like this goes, tarot is all forms of divination are like looking at roadmaps or reading signs when you're driving. The sharp left turn ahead 15 mile an hour suggestion, when you make eye contact with it, doesn't suddenly change the direction of the road. You're already driving on that road. If you don't want to encounter it, get off the highway. But we don't usually think that far ahead, or we don't want to because we're attached to what we're moving towards or what we're driving with, or blah. We don't want, there's something inside where we don't want to, or we can't, or we don't have the ability to yet. You know, maybe we're stuck in that traffic and we can't make the exit. So to a degree, we are fated to that turn signal, to that turning point. But that doesn't, there are choices that we made that led us to being on that highway. And seeing that sign didn't make it happen. Reading tarot does not make things happen. Reading spirit boards doesn't make things happen. Yeah, it's important to be intentional about who you're calling up, what you're doing, because this is why we don't give 8-year-olds internet access all the time and things like that, because you never know who you're contacting. And that's how we end up with like the Omegle hassle years ago, blah, blah. Yeah. So similarly with divination, it's important to start creating a foundation of connecting to yourself, getting grounded, learning how to practice communication and putting yourself out there safely. And that's why we don't suggest it very early on, and unless it's guided or unless you learn how to do that. But it's not like how Western media says, oh, you're inviting the devil in. You're just, sometimes the information's going to be really helpful. Sometimes you're not going to want to hear it. Sometimes you're asking yourself, sometimes you're asking out. It kind of depends on how you're dialing the phone.
That's a beautiful answer. I love the metaphor of the river and just kind of surrendering to the universe. And guess what? If you see that left turn coming and you don't slow down, you're probably going to crash a lot harder than you would. Or you know, if you do slow down, you're going to be able to handle and take that turn. And I think that was a beautiful analogy that you gave there all the way across the board.
Thank you.
So this kind of leads me into my next question. So fate, free will, it's almost like a choose your own adventure, kind of.
It is kind of.
What do you personally believe our souls are doing here on Earth? And what do you think happens when we die?
We're just experiencing. our choices of how we experience is up to us, and I heavily suggest we lean much further into compassion and unification. I think that's what's happening right now, kind of collectively, as we're learning that we are a global society and that we're all kind of, you know, we're starting to expand on that. It'll be a long time before that happens, as we're working on it. But as far as what our souls are doing here, we're living, we're just experiencing. The point of life is to be, feel the sun, drink the water, interact, learn, experience.
How big of a piece is the learning element to that, do you think?
Everything. We're always learning everything. Yeah. Even if we don't realize it, we're always learning. So there's every single day, there is some form of new experience that you are integrating into your, whether it's your subconscious, whether you're actively thinking about it, in some way, shape, or form, we are always integrating some kind of new thing, whether that's a positive or a negative, or whether that's helpful or harmful information. It's something. It's learning something.
The helpful and harmful are both by design. I mean, it's almost to think about the fact that harmful can be beneficial as well is an interesting concept to kind of tackle.
Well, what's good for the spider is bad for the fly.
Yeah.
Harm and help is all based off of perspective. I think we need to minimize suffering, not make everything perfectly good. There is no perfectly good. Good is perspective. It is subjective entirely. It is completely dependent on all of the little tiny things involved. There is always a level of harm, and there is always a level of help. The degree in which and how who it affects, that entirely changes the definition of that. Do I think it's by design? I think that life is to be experienced. That includes pain. That includes pleasure. That includes birth and death. Death makes room for new life. It is cyclical. We are all part of experience. I don't think we're born to die. I think that it's okay. One of my absolute favorite pieces of literature, Watership Down, is Watership Down. It's
Watership
a book.
Down.
There was an animation movie in like the 80s or 90s, and it's a four-part Netflix animated series as well. I really like the four-part animated series because it really does well on bringing the book far to life. But I'm a fan of the book. The author is wonderful, but he didn't intend for it to be any particular political or religious exploration. He just didn't like that all of the children's stories were so poor. I promise this ties around, I'll get there. But the thing about Watership Down is within it at one point, and I'm not going to do a lot of spoilers, I hope that, you know, it's something that could be fun to learn about, but at one point, one of the rabbits, they're looking for a new warren. Humans destroy the warren and they're off looking for a new place to live. And that's the point of the journey. And so one of the rabbits is dying, and he meets who's called the Black Rabbit of Inlay, which is their Grim Reaper, their death, you know, their spirit farer and psychopomp. And he asks her, am I to walk with you now? Am I to die? Am I to leave? And she tells him, and I genuinely hold this to be true in my heart. She tells him, oh, my rabbit, all walk with me. It is only for a brief moment called life that you have left my side. And I think this is why I no longer fear death. The experience of dying, not a fan, not a fan, sounds uncomfy, but I no longer fear the other side, which growing up in Western culture, growing up in Western heavily Christian culture, the point of eternal death is meant to terrify you to the point of never leaving. And it's very good at that. And despite doing all of the deconstruction of my taught practice growing up, that was still, I think, somewhere in there, which is why I like to worship my death gods. That doesn't mean that I go around harming things. That is in honor of death and as an experience, and to find it sacred and to honor all remains and things like that. There is no harm done, to just to let you know. And so I think that's why I'm comforted by death deities. The things that I think happen after we die is so wide, just like life, it's so wide and various. There is no one thing that happens when we die, but I think we have already been dead, whatever that means. We've already been on the other. It's just for a brief moment that we're here now, and we'll leave for a while. We'll come back for a while in some other way, shape, or form, whether that's here on Earth or whether that's somebody somewhere else or whatever that means. But it is it's just a connection. There is no actual separation between us all. I am you, Bo, and I'm my cat under my bed, and I am the grasshopper out there in the lawn, and I am the Palestinian. And I am everyone.
So do you think that there's a, you get into like pi, right? The you know, the little 3.14 to infinity.
Sure.
And to talk about the perfect circle and how it's the magical number. A lot of people believe it's the magical number of the universe. And you think about, maybe there's a something, maybe our existence, maybe we will experience, if infinity is infinity, maybe we will experience every single, what's the best way I'm looking? Maybe I will experience you. You will experience me. Mm-hmm. I'll experience your cat, Tom Brady, you know, the orcas in the ocean.
Have you ever heard of The Egg by Andy Weir?
No.
Okay. So, basically, the long story short, it's like a 15-minute piece. It was originally a written story, but it's on YouTube and you can watch it. It was like done as an adaptation. It's really good. Andy Weir's The Egg is about how all of life. So a man dies. He gets hit by a bus and he dies, and he suddenly wakes up in a field on the other side next to some old man. Like some old man in like a button up and all that jazz. And, you know, and he's sitting there and he's talking to him. All of a sudden, he's like, where am I? What's happening? He's like, oh, well, there's really no way to put this. You're dead, you know, kind of deal. And he's like, I'm just going to be straightforward with you, as I have every time. You're dead. And he goes through all the questions, you know, what happened, all that. But the way that it comes about, he's like, well, when you're ready, you're going to go back, and you're going to go back as a fifth century, something like a fifth or fourth century Chinese girl, something like that. You know, he's like, I'm going back in time. And he goes, oh, time does, that's not really real. That doesn't really work. That's, you know, that's a thing that you're feeling out while you're down there, but that's not really how any of this works. And, they start going to, you know, so then who have I been? And he's like, who haven't you been? Well, who will I be? Who won't you be? You know, kind of deal. And it's exactly what you're saying. Not only is it every human life, it's every form of life. And the whole purpose of it by the end of it is because we're an egg, because all of the whole universe, the whole point of everything is an egg developing within itself. And eventually when all has been experienced, which, because time's not real, means it's already happened and will never happen.
That's mind-bending. The time is not real, and the time does not exist outside of the Earth realm is just mind-bending to me.
Well, we've already started to kind of play with the idea of how the passage of time is based off of our relative experience to what we're near physically, as well with astrophysics. And I think that that's really interesting. You mentioned mathematics, and mathematics is the language in which I think that our universe describes and speaks in, sort of. And so it's our way of learning to describe how the universe interacts with itself. And that can be a very beautiful thing. We don't have to have all of the answers. All I know is that I've asked for messages from my future self have grown up and realized that those aligned, and have also asked messages from my past self. I've asked for messages from my future children if they are ever to be born. I don't know if they will be. I think that they will, but I don't know if they will be. But I'm able to communicate with potential and possibility, because honestly, we're all one thing. And if I just zoom out far enough, if you think we're not, you just zoom out further. Still don't think we are, keep going. Eventually you'll realize it is all one giant thing. There is no border. There is no line. It's us. We're all just playing pretend.
Yeah.
Eventually, hopefully we realize that. I think we do. I think we will. I think that's how I would answer that as far as how mathematics works and the interconnection of past and future and being each other. That is something I philosophically hold to be true.
And I think we're still figuring out. I saw a talk on the God particle, and I think the physicists can only explain either 5 or 7% of how the universe actually works. So we're still learning. We're still very young as a species, I believe, and we're still learning how it all works. But maybe not all the answers are ever going to be there.
Yeah, and that's okay. We don't have to know everything. That's human hubris. And I worship gods that are literally about education and study and learning. But that's kind of the point, is that we can never truly know everything. Yeah. Eventually, things are lost to time, to experience. What's the point of keeping score and trying to gather every little piece of information if you're just going to burn out in a quick second?
Well, there's some people that dedicate their entire lives to that, you know?
Well, I totally understand, and that's okay too. We all have our purpose and drives, but I think it's also important to recognize that sometimes our purpose is to experience.
Jump in the river and see where it takes us, right?
To jump in the river, see where it takes you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so thank you so much, Sage, for joining me, and nothing but the best to you as you continue to bring your magic forth out into the world. That's all the time we have for you guys today. For those of you who would like to connect with Sage, you can do so at the Rabbit Ear Mystic website in the link below or on the ticker below. And a big thank you to everyone who watched this episode of Sunflower Signals. If you enjoyed today's show, please like, comment, or subscribe, as it helps the channel gain traction and reach more listeners. May you all have a blessed day filled with love and light.
Thank you so much. Have a blessed day.